This is KTWH LP 99.5 FM, Two Harbors Community Radio. I've got on the phone with me on an incredibly blustery Monday afternoon, Mr. Matthew Brown, the station manager up at WTIP in Grand Marais, Minnesota. Welcome aboard the good ship KTWH, Matthew.
Well, glad to be with you this afternoon. And yes, it is a blustery day today here along the North Shore.
What were your gusts? I think you told me they pushed past 60 miles an hour today.
I think the highest one, the last I saw, was recorded right at 59, and that was right around 8 o'clock this morning.
Okay. Well, is it not too many months ago that you pushed 80 mile per hour winds in your harbor?
That was right around Christmas time where we had those amazing winds that really were, that's like hurricane strength winds. It was pretty amazing up here over Christmas. And today is not quite as bad, but it's blowing pretty darn hard. And actually, it's the length that it's been blowing. It's been doing this for about 24 hours now.
Yeah, I think our winds have been excessive for even longer than that. It all starts to blur after a while, and you feel like you've been living in wind, as you said, since like Christmas time.
Sure.
I'd really like to know whether it was the windiest season. And we have a climatologist. We're going to ask him that this Friday, Matthew. And that's one of the fun things about community radio, is bringing all kinds of different expertise on issues great and small to the listener who inquiring minds want to know. And they're probably wondering why I picked this week to visit with you. And you might be wondering that too, Matthew, because I'm about a month late to the celebration of the 25th anniversary of WTIP taking the airwaves in 1998. It's congratulations. That's absolutely amazing.
Well, thank you very much. It is an amazing thing that, you know, WTIP has been now 25th year, which is amazing. And, you know, when we look back at it, and as we're celebrating all year long, which is a wonderful thing, we could not have done this without the volunteers that really laid the groundwork for it. And even though we went on the air in 1998, the first meeting notes that I can see were about 1992, so about 6 years of planning and things that had to happen for the station just to get on the air in 1998 was amazing, and it was all volunteer.
Right. I'm trying to recall. I know for a good while we would visit by phone with Deb Benedict, who was his longtime station manager. And it's been, is it going on 5+ years that you've been at the helm of the station?
That is just about right. Yep, about 5 years that Deb has been retired now. So.
And you had other duties at TIP before that. I'm curious as to how much contact you have with folks who might have been sitting around kitchen tables back in the early 1990s. Dreaming
right.
up this amazing, amazing thing that came to life from their early dreams.
Yeah, so I started volunteering as a radio host, a music host, in 2001.
Oh, wow. You were on there. You go back pretty close to the sign-on, the launch time. So, wow, you might be able to have firsthand knowledge of their memories then of how this took root.
And we have been interviewing many of those founders that still live in the community, and several of them are still on the air with us. After all these years, they are still volunteer music hosts, people that were back here in the early 90s getting this ready to go. And that's just the big wow factor of like, wow, they're still involved with the station 25 years later there, and they're still doing shows. It's amazing. It's wonderful the information that they have, the institutional knowledge they have about WTIP is just some of the best ever.
I see that you've been running episodes, history of WTIP episodes. I haven't had a chance to listen to one yet, Matthew, but could you characterize a little bit for folks? Back in the early 90s, there was no sign of radio on the horizon in Cook County anywhere, or was there a Minnesota Public Radio signal getting in? Or what was the original motivation, and what were the baby steps that they had to go through? I assume they were radio newbies.
Right. They were radio newbies, and, you know, they all felt the same thing as, you know, we had, at that time we had Cook County. I had two weekly newspapers that both came out on Friday, and they just felt the need that we should be able to hearing the news more than just one day a week. And so they really believed that by going with the radio, they could get the word out just constantly about different things that are happening, not only about different meetings that happen around the area, whether it's the city council or the county commissioners. But really the big thing was also emergencies, whether it be weather, you know, ice storms, thunderstorms, tornado watches and warnings, or any kind of warnings that go out there, power outages, lots of different things that WTIP has been reporting on for the last 25 years. So really those early volunteers felt that that was something that was needed here in Cook County that just was not available at that time. And there was, in the mid-90s, NPR did come up to the area, both classical and their news station, but those, of course, are based in Minneapolis, and they're not giving anything local.
Right.
So we were really looking for the local portion.
Right. They didn't have any on-the-scene broadcaster who could break into their programming to give anything relevant, however far that is, 200-plus miles away from where the corporate headquarters was for NPR.
Correct.
It's a world away. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Kind of rings true for those of us even who dreamed up KTWH, Matthew, because back in 2012 we had, I don't know how much it rained in Grand Marais, but you know, it rained a lot on June 20th of 2012 here, and the entire town was surrounded by washed out roads, and there was nobody to tell anybody whether they were going to drive into a sinkhole or not if they headed out of town. And we thought, we need to be on the air. And it sounds like similar motivations up in Grand Marais. You know, it makes me want to ask a question, because the people who dreamed of WTIP back in the early 90s, that's over 30 years ago. A lot has happened in communications and media since then. And kind of there's this lingering existential question, I guess, get asked sometimes about, Matthew, and I pose it to you as a manager at a station that's been successful for quite a bit in its community. Maybe you have a better picture of the good answer of this. Why community radio in this digital AI social media era? Or maybe even put it trickier, what exactly is community radio in this era? What does it uniquely do for listeners?
Well, that is a good question, and that's something we're always continually answering. But, you know, community radio is just that. It's by the community for the community. It's, you know, we always tell people, it's, you know, your hosts on the air, they're your coworkers, they're your friends, they're your neighbors, and they're bringing you just a type of radio you're not going to hear anywhere else. We're talking about, you know, the music they bring. You know, it's not from a big station that plays as 100 stations across the U.S. No, this is your friends and neighbors and community members bringing you the kind of music that they listen to, which is really nice. And then as far as it just goes back to news and information and weather and public service announcements and things that are happening, you know, that hyper-local stuff that's happening right in our area, or in case down in Two Harbors, and we're bringing that to our listeners. And they're just not going to find that anywhere else. There's just no possible way to find out what's happening in our community. And these are all very important things. And there's nobody to report on that except community radio stations. And across the whole country, that is really what, you know, community radio stations look at, as being, you know, bringing out the best parts of your community. And they bring these to you. And it really makes community radio so very special to each area that they service, because, you know, in the days now of these big, huge stations that, you know, you don't need a brick and mortar station anywhere. You can just make a broadcast from any place in the country. I mean, this is what community radio stations bring to you. It's really the most valuable part of stuff that's happening in your community. And without a community radio station, a lot of that would be lost.
Great answer. And it does keep evolving how we have to respond in changing conditions. For instance, we had this little thing called a pandemic for a few years, Matthew, and I know it probably, if you're like KTWH at all in terms of doing outreach, going into the community and running a benefit event, or bringing in listeners into the station to participate in fund drives, or even just the fact that you have so many volunteers doing programming, must have been a real challenge for you. How did you guys fare up in Grand Marais?
Well, yeah, the pandemic changed everything, and it changed it right away. And boy, we had to adapt like everybody else. Before the pandemic, WTIP was using 35 volunteers each week to bring the programming to our listeners, and that got trimmed way back. And by the first few weeks of the pandemic, probably the first, I say, first few months of the pandemic, and now we are only using about 17 volunteers per week. So it got cut almost in half.
And okay.
It was a big thing. And, you know, and a lot of people had invested a lot of time being a radio host here. And then when we had to close the doors, boy, it just really affected everybody because they were so used to it. And they just were so used to coming in. And this was part of their lives. And then we took that away because we had to. And it's difficult for us to try to figure out how to ramp that back up.
Right.
We do have 17 great volunteers a week that come in now. That's out of probably like 40 volunteers we have. But yeah, it's difficult at a certain point to figure out how we're going to move out of this particular region and this area now and get back into the volunteers coming back into the studio.
Well, an interesting thing that's come up for us is in this age of multiple media, including the internet, which wasn't there when I first got my foot in the door in community radio in the 1980s, you had to be at the station. Have you guys explored people doing programming remotely, sending their radio programs into you over the web, or are there more challenges to that than meets the eye?
No, actually, that's exactly what we did during the pandemic. Those first couple months of the pandemic, we had to switch, and we set up 15 home recording studios the first couple months of the pandemic, and people recorded their shows and either sent them in to us via Dropbox or email, depending on where they are and what they had for a connection to Wi-Fi or whatnot.
Right.
So we've been doing that, and still we have some people, probably about four or five, that are still doing that. So yeah, that is our home studios. And, you know, we had a lot of Zoom meetings with all 15 of them on there, and they had to learn from each other of how to produce these things, how to make these, you know, and we had to go through how to get people underwriters and everything. And so it was a big to-do, but boy, like I said, we adapted just like many other corporations and companies and businesses around the country and around the world to make it happen. And one of the things we found out is that our listeners, even though they knew it was pre-recorded, because we said that at the beginning of each show, they really felt a connection that the community is still producing something for them. And they really enjoyed that a lot, that they could turn off the regular news, which was all about the pandemic, and listen to WTIP. And it's like, well, there's your friends and neighbors and coworkers again playing you music. And it was just very nice to have those people take it upon themselves to say, I want a home recording studio and I'm going to keep on doing that.
Yeah, that's a pretty serious amount of dedication. And especially if people's forte in life is not understanding the world of IT, you're asking a little bit of your volunteers. And that's the amazing thing about volunteers is if they get to do the show with the music that they love or the public affairs that they're passionate about, they'll get out of their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Over time, since you came on the air in 1998, I believe if I'm not mistaken, you were brought on the airwaves carrying some programs that were forwarding from what KUMD was producing in Duluth, and you added your own extra local touch to it on a daily basis? Is that sort of the way it happened?
Yeah. So we went on the air, actually, the actual day we went on the air was April 28th in 1998, and when we went on the air, we broadcast KUMD 24 hours a day.
Okay.
For probably the first 8 months or so.
Okay.
We just rebroadcast them. And then we slowly broke into that. I think the first year we did 2 hours of local programming and 22 hours of KUMD. And we used that probably KUMD services all the way up until probably 2004 or 2005, and just can't thank them enough. We had a great relationship with them, and they were just really into helping us getting going and just broadcasting something, knowing that we were going to turn into something. We just didn't know what we were going to turn into.
Well, you certainly turned the corner. Honestly, Matthew, one of my questions is, what do you think has made it possible, you know, given that slow, seemingly gradual ramp up, what has made it possible for an area with such a modest size population? I mean, Cook County, one of the smaller population counties in Minnesota, likely. And how have you spawned, sustained, and now, you know, have such a vibrant 24-hour-a-day radio outlet that's originating all from your humble world headquarters.
I think the key to it all was volunteers. Volunteers can't thank them enough. And the amount of work that the volunteers did for us for years and years and years getting it going, it was just, you know, it's irreplaceable, because WTIP didn't have any money to spend on having an employee or things like that, or two employees. So it just took a long time and a lot of local people stepping in and making quality radio just out of the fact they wanted to make radio. And that really was the thing that got us going those first, you know, 10 years was really, that's how it was. It's just straight across the board. It was volunteers. It was just amazing. And we slowly added on people, one and then two people, then a half a person, and kept building it up and building it up. But to get where we're at, there's just no going anywhere other than the fact that volunteers have made it what happened.
I take that lesson to heart. We're in our growth stages here at KTWHLP. We have aspirations to become a non-commercial educational station, such as I guess you have been since the beginning, Matthew. WTIP is a non-commercial educational.
We're just non-commercial educational, and yes, and we are, yeah, just an independent community radio station, independent of everybody else. So
yeah,
we're not affiliated with the university or anybody.
Yeah, we know the feeling. We know what that means. That independence comes with challenge, but a lot of freedom to do what you need to do to serve your community. I just wanted to give maybe an opportunity for you to give listeners an idea of what's coming up during your big celebration year. You have an annual festival that we all hear about down here, the Radio Waves Festival. Is that the biggest thing on the agenda, or do you have other things that you'd like to tout that people might want to venture north for?
Yeah, actually, coming up in May, on May 20th, we are having our first live in-person annual meeting coming up, which is nice because we haven't had that since, I think, 2018. So that's on May 20th for our listener or for our members, which is exciting. We're having a local author, Tim Cochran, talk about his new book, Making the Carry, which is all about life along the North Shore and Ely and all the way out to Isle Royale. And then our big, I don't think I alluded to before, but, you know, we haven't had a lot of in-person membership drives, but starting on July 5th, we're doing a 7-day membership drive, and we're inviting the public back in for lunches, and we're having a big tent put up out in our parking lot, and we're having lots of music and a couple of dance parties and all sorts of things. So that's happening in July. And then, yes, Radio Waves Music Festival, which is the first full weekend in September. Looking forward to that. We got some last year. We went back down and had a live one, and we're going to continue with this year. Have about 22 great acts that'll be down there playing music. Start at Friday at about 4 p.m. and go through Sunday at about 2 p.m. So really looking forward to all those events. And of course, there's probably going to be birthday cake at every single one of those.
Excellent. Having an excuse for indulging the sweet tooth all through this anniversary year sounds good to me, Matthew. Although
Absolutely.
If you throw in some pie, I might especially have an eye for showing up. But,
good thinking there. I like
that. I wanted to thank you for spending this time with us, and I also make sure we have all of our reference points. So 90.7 is the main frequency on the dial for people that want to get the main station. You do have translators as well, don't you? And do they serve particular difficult-to-reach audiences?
That's exactly what we have, yes. We have one up in Grand Portage, and then one located about 3/4 of the way up the Gunflint Trail. So we cover those areas, and hopefully we're covering all the boundary waters for people that, you know, there's not phone service out there right now for the most part, but yeah, they can definitely, we give the weather at the top of every hour, which we tell people to tune in for.
Oh, great. Yeah. In addition to 90.7 FM, your device playable just through WTIP.org, or do you have, you know, you might have a bunch of different tune-in types of opportunities?
Tune-ins are available on your smart speaker, and then always right at WTIP.org, we have the Listen Now button up there.
Perfect.
You can just click on and listen.
And if people want to look up the website, they just go to WTIP.org.
That is it. Yep.
Fantastic. Thanks, Matthew. I'll have to trim this interview down. I know you probably know what that means. A few hours of,
yes, indeed,
of fussing, and it's been well worth it. I feel like I have a better picture of what happens up the other end of Highway 61. Thanks for joining us for this shout out to WTIP.
All right. And thanks for reaching out to us this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thanks. You take care.
Bye-bye.
This is Leo Baybue for KTWH. We've just been speaking with Matthew Brown, station manager at WTIP. Learning about how all roads lead to community radio on the North Shore, or at least we hope they do. Thanks for listening.